Huddersfield put four past Reading FC to round off a dismal first period of the new season. Five defeats from six in all competitions, conceding 16 goals, only tells part of the story as Veljko Paunović looks to battle a slump that dates back as far as March. Welcome to the Tarlesen Podcast, episode 270. I'm your host, Mark Mayo. We are a podcast by Reading fans, for Reading fans, and as we go into an international break filled with doom and gloom, let's see if we can wrangle out some sort of positivity, or at least tell you why there's doom and gloom around Reading Football Club at the moment. To help me do that this week are two of the Tarlesen's finest minds. Assistant editor Ollie Allen is one of them. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Not quite sure why I agreed to spend my bank holiday Monday morning talking through a 4-0 Reading defeat, but here we are.
Well, yeah, there is the question and the devotion, isn't there? And it's always much appreciated. For anyone who obviously comes on the podcast, sends any messages in for the mailbag and also listens, and Ben Thomas, the view from the Dolan, also joins us this morning. How is it going, mate?
I'm all right, Mark. I'm a bit of a buffet of emotions at the moment. We link with a signing or a couple of players and I get excited, and then we lose 4-0 and I'm down again. And then, you know, this morning wake up to the news where we've got two potential other signings. So it's kind of up and down roller coaster at the moment, but I'm keen to kind of get into it and talk about it in more detail, definitely.
Absolutely. Plenty to talk about in the podcast. Hopefully, as I said, I don't want to dwell too much on the Huddersfield game, but there is still plenty to talk about. Big mailbag coming later on in the show, and then obviously news bites and looking ahead to the next couple of weeks at Reading as well. Before we do that, big thanks always to ZTZ Films, our sponsor, and our Patreon subscribers. And also just a word of advice as well is that if you want to keep up to date with all the big things going on around Reading Football Club, but maybe you don't have time to be checking the Tarlesen Twitter a lot or going on the Tarlesen website, we do have a new newsletter coming out that is available if you go to the Tarlesen Twitter page, and it should be right at the top. You can just click subscribe and it goes straight into email. I think we're planning on doing that every Wednesday or so for the next few weeks to see how we can get a newsletter going, just to bring you in and give you a bit more Reading news in your mailbox, if that's exactly what you want at the moment, because it's not necessarily the best news coming round at the moment. Let's go into the recap then and talk about Huddersfield 4, Reading 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, ahead of this game, Huddersfield had won two in a row, as many as their previous 17 games, in fact. So they kind of just started their turnaround, which Reading have, well, they've only won one in, I think it's all season now, basically. So not very good. Also, we came into the game with Femi Azeez and Tom McIntyre both being ruled out for around 3 months. That means Lucas Shaw, Yaku Mate, Ovi Ejaria joining them being out. It kind of meant that we had a bit of a weird starting 11 with Andy Yeard on left back, Tom Holmes right back. The new lads, Tom Delibashiru and Junior Hoylett, started on the wings. And on the bench, there was only one senior outfielder, which was Alan Halilovic, who had only just signed. With all that taken into account then, Ollie, is there any excuse for losing 4-0?
In a word, no. Certainly not in the manner that we did lose 4-0. I think with regards to the starting lineup, there's not really an awful lot Paunović can do. As you say, if you look at the bench, his only senior option was Alan Halilovic. He only had one very short training session. Obviously, he had Dejan Tetek and Ethan Bristow as well. I probably would have played Ethan Bristow at left back and kept Andy Yeard on my right back. I think particularly at the moment when the squad is so limited, you do at least want, you know, round pegs in round holes rather than putting Yeard on at left back and Tom Holmes at right back and having two square pegs in round holes. So that's the only change that I'd have made to the lineup. But yeah, there's no excuse really for the way that Reading I'm not even sure how to sum it up without swearing, to be honest with you. But I think you have to look at Liam Moore and Michael Morrison as the two main culprits, and you can make all the excuses you want about, you know, players being injured and the squad not being very big and the transfer embargo and stuff. But that does not, you know, mean that you just forget how to defend. You know, Liam Moore and Michael Morrison are probably one of the most experienced centre-back pairings in the Championship, except for probably Curtis Davis and Phil Jagielka, who are about combined age of 100 at Derby County. But, you know, they've got nearly 1,000 career appearances between them. You know, there is absolutely no way they should be defending like that. Absolutely no way. You know, some of the goals, which I'm sure we'll go through in a minute, it's as if they've just lost all sort of concept of defensive positioning, coordination, you know, communication, desire. You know, it was just absolutely terrible. And, you know, it's quite easy, I suppose, to use hyperbole after defeats like that. You know, it's our biggest defeat for 2.5 years, I think, since February 2019 against Sheffield United. But I genuinely think, I mean, I wasn't there, thankfully. You know, my hat goes off to, you know, all the brave souls that trekked up to Huddersfield and watched that. But just from watching the highlights and from listening to stuff, it genuinely, I can't remember us defending worse over 90 minutes. I think Liam Moore's pathetic excuse of tracking back for that Wigan goal last year was probably the worst individual moment that I've seen. But in terms of across a whole game, for four goals, you know, not even one of them when it come out of any credit. It's not as if any of them are particularly good goals from Huddersfield's point of view. They're all just absolutely shambolic defending from Reading's point of view. And to I suppose round off and go back to the original question, that there is absolutely no excuse whatsoever, I think, for what we saw on Saturday afternoon.
That's the thing for me, isn't it? Is that, I mean, some have said that it didn't really play like a 4-0 defeat. And perhaps that's a case of Reading looking good in the middle third and kind of moving the ball around nicely, but kind of bad in the other two, which is, I mean, the other two are more important than the middle third. The middle thirds are the most useless third to be good in, but that is that's our best third of the pitch. So in terms of Ben, that's the thing for me, is that there were no screamers here. There were no bad refereeing decisions. There were no lucky bounces of the ball. All of these goals just were pretty standard goals that you'd expect a team to try and score. And that it comes, obviously, if you isolate this game and say, oh, well, you can pass it off, but it's you can't isolate it, because these are the problems that Reading have had, as I said in the intro, going back to March. So why haven't we fixed it? But why is it still going on when we can all see it happening?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing to say is that you don't lose 4-0 accidentally. You know, one, maybe two, perhaps, but four is unforgivable. But the concern that I had when I saw the goals sort of coming in, and, you know, the final score, was that realistically Huddersfield are our rivals in terms of expectations and league position this year. And the previous week, bizarrely, I was up in Sheffield seeing some friends, and we managed to get tickets for the Sheffield United Huddersfield game. And I was sat there thinking, we'd walked the park off both of these teams, that Huddersfield were terrible. Like, I think they had two shots on target, which they scored. So I kind of went into that game and I was kind of thinking this way, okay, we're going to get a result out of this, whether it's a draw or a win or whatever. But to lose 4-0 is, I just don't think anyone saw that coming. And that lineup of 11 players had enough quality and enough experience to be able to at least get a draw out of that game. And the concern for me is the kind of, you know, the downing of tools defensively. You know, Ollie talked about the centre-backs. Yeah, can't disagree with him. But you've got to look at the central midfield as well, which was so strong last year in protection. They just let them go through. And the ball, I say the highlights, but the clips that I've seen, the extended bits that I've seen, we couldn't keep the ball. The retention in midfield was absolutely dreadful. You know, I know that there was people criticising the players up front, you know, particularly Puskas, but we could go on. There are so many potential individuals, but collectively that team were not good enough to get anything out of the game, and they got exactly what they deserved. Now, moving forward, what needs to happen quite simply is they just need to stop conceding goals. Don't worry about going out to get a win. Just stop conceding those awful goals. Whether that's a shake-up in personnel, as Ollie said, whether or not he decides to actually play the players in their correct position, that is down to Panovic. Regardless of what you say about anything else, that decision to change those two full-backs around was his choice, and it didn't work. Now, should they have done better in those positions? Absolutely, 100%. But he's got to take the brunt of that, unfortunately, because that was his decision tactically to put those players in there. And I think, one of the main issues for me is now they've got 2 weeks on the training pitch to get this right and to move it forward. We saw kind of, you know, performances like this towards the end of last season. Argument there was that it's been a long season, very small squad of players, they're tired. There can't be any excuses for that now. Yeah, we've got a small squad, but there are players there that could come in and do that job, like Bristow. You know, we've got other players coming in. Halovic, based on his performance and the little cameo that I saw, he was by far and away the best player on the pitch. He only played 15, 20 minutes or so. So that's not acceptable. And we're angry as a fan base, and I'm angry as a fan because of that. But this is now where it needs to change, and this needs to be the turning point. We can't have another of these situations. If we'd gone to Fulham and lost that heavily, yeah, okay, there could be an argument to say we're completely outclassed. But to Huddersfield, all due respect to them, that should not be happening. And the goals, as Ollie said, unforgivable, really, from a defensive point of view, with players of that experience in the back line.
Well, I think the main positive is that that it's the international break now. And as you say, with 2 weeks, with the new players and everything like that, Veljko Paunovic will have as much time as he could possibly ask for to sort this out on the training ground. And a couple of players will go away for internationals, but not many. So generally speaking, it's a really good time to have an international break, as much as it hurts to obviously have to think about this for the next couple of weeks. I think we can move on in just a second, because the final thing I'm going to say is that Huddersfield have an 11-minute extended highlights reel on their YouTube if you want to go and watch it. And I think I sat through it, so you don't have to review the goals. And really what I found was that every goal just had multiple problems with it. The first goal, Yeardom's a bit too tight. It's good skill to get over him, but there's no covering for Moore or the midfield to get across. The ball in, Rinomata just, I don't understand how he can make such an awful miss of the ball, just kind of dummies it to his man. Holmes doesn't get across, but, you know, it's Rinomata's man who scores, and Raphael does a good job of diving out of the way of the ball. Second goal, Deli Bashiru gives away a free kick, which is, it's not a great challenge, but credit to him for at least trying to put a tackle in, even if it's not his forte. The same can't be said of Moore, though, because it's a bit of a good ball, but he just watches his man and it's a simple finish. The fact that Moore lets his man get goal side, that's the first thing you learn not to do when you're defending, is keep your man on the, you know, on the other side of the goal so you can marshal him and everything like that. The organisation's just bad generally, because the line's not flat as the ball comes in, plays all over the place, and it's no surprise that it's a goal. Third goal, Deli Bashiru gives the ball away in midfield. The attacker just kind of runs at Liam Moore, who I don't think I've seen a defender back off as much as Liam Moore. And, you know, he's an athletic guy. He's not a big unit defender. So you'd think that his agility would mean that he can make tackles a bit easier on the ground and everything like that. But he just stands off the marker so deep, he's halfway to Halifax, and his lazy leg dangled in for a challenge is just not good enough. That's definitely not what they teach you at defending school, is that why don't you just dangle a lazy leg out and try and win the ball that way. The ball kind of bounces towards goal. John Swift kind of shows him to the goal. Morrison, I guess, could be closer sooner, but yeah, it's a right finish. And then the fourth goal, it's disappointing for Tom Holmes, because I thought he was a good right back last season, but he ended last season poorly, and he started this season poorly again. He's outpaced and outmuscled down the flank. If you're slower than the winger, at least stick him in the advertising boards. At least make yourself known. But he just kind of lets him through. Morrison's drawn across, but Morrison's drawn into no man's land just before that. Actually, I don't know why he tries to press the ball so high. It's not his game. And the two centre backs are kind of vertically aligned, which means they're both on the same side of the pitch with about a 10-yard gap between them. It's just awful, really. Moore stands off his man, but he's kind of, you know, just kind of in no man's land himself now. Laurent and Yeardon realise far too late that there's a free man, and that's 4-0. And I think, well, let's let Veljko Paunovic have the last word on this particular game, move on, go into the mailbag, and talk about something else.
Every team in the season has games like this. Unfortunately, today, the image we projected in the second half was poor, but on the other side, we also know that every team has a chance in every game ahead to show a reaction, the proper pride, and what we are made of. So I believe that in the past we were very good in doing that, in reacting and in having good performances after losses like these, but I know that next 2 weeks will be crucial for our lifting the spirits.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Starting us off this week then, big thanks to quite a lot of people who have got in touch this week for the mailbag, as often happens when we lose 4-0. So it does certainly bring out people's thoughts and opinions. So big thanks on the Tilehurst End Twitter and the Facebook. And also you can email in thetilehurstend@gmail.com for your thoughts. James Quinn saying, who is set piece and why does he always turn up against us? I swear he's better than Messi. Hugh saying, can we start the season over? We weren't ready, tying our shoelaces when the Football League blew the whistle. Alex Everson saying, our kit is nice, isn't it? Which is certainly a good positive level. And Waldemar Janajak saying, well, what's happening? And Ollie, I'm not going to ask the what's happening question to you on just the general fact that it will add another hour to the show to go through all of the stuff that's happening. But I suppose that is kind of the saving grace for Reading in terms of working out, you know, I suppose more in our expectations than obviously, you know, saying, oh, it doesn't matter that we lose 4-0. But to answer the question, what's happening, you have to cover a lot of subjects. You have to cover the finances, the injuries, the obviously, you know, just the manager not being particularly good at the moment, the players not being particularly good. But all of those things mean that it's multifaceted. There's not just one thing holding Reading back. And it's actually, you know, I guess a lot of those problems are the club's own fault. But the fact is that we are dealing with a lot of problems at the moment.
Yeah, that is true. You know, not to go back to it too much, but I still don't think that's an excuse for the way we played and defended on Saturday. You know, make that clear. You know, there's, regardless of the embargo and stuff and the injuries and the lack of squad depth, the way we defended and the way we just down tools was unacceptable. But yeah, there are a lot of outside factors, and that probably sort of gives me sympathy for Veljko Paunović. You know, he's said himself that the squad is not complete. He has been dealt a very rough hand with regards to injuries. You know, with Ajari missing the start of the season, hopefully he'll be back after the international break, after his COVID thing. Obviously, you know, Mate and Jar out till January, but
well, if he returns in January, it really will be January, won't it?
Yeah. Well, I think Mate's out even longer than that, but yeah, and obviously, you know, McIntyre and Aziz supposedly out for until the new year as well, probably. Obviously losing key players in the summer in Elise and Richards. So he has been dealt a rough hand. And I think it was a stat the other day that, you know, if you take, you know, Elise, Zhao, Mate and Ajaria out of that team, then you lose pretty much 80% of Reading's goals from last season. So it's not really a surprise that we're struggling as we are. But I do think it was Jordan Cottle actually on Twitter who made a very good point that you can take these things in isolation, is that, yes, you know, Paunović has been dealt a very rough hand with regards to stuff behind the scenes and stuff beyond his control, really. But at the same time, he does need to be better. And as I say, the way he set the team up on Saturday wasn't good enough. You know, they aren't mutually exclusive. You can acknowledge that Paunović has been dealt a very rough hand and that Reading themselves are in a very tough situation. But at the same time, you can think and acknowledge that he's got to be doing a lot better than he already is. You know, you mentioned the set pieces there again on Saturday. The second goal was such a simple free kick whipped in, and yeah, none of them pick up their man. You know, there are, I think, six Reading shirts in that sort of area where the ball comes in, and four Huddersfield shirts. You know, that there's no way that a Huddersfield body should be getting a final touch on that. But, you know, it's not even just the one Huddersfield man. If he doesn't get a touch, then it's his mate behind him. So the defending for set pieces, we know this season has been horrific. I checked this morning, four set piece goals we've supposedly conceded this season, according to Who Scored. I'd imagine it's probably more than that, because I'd imagine they don't count the goal that Bristol City scored from a long throw-in. So, yeah, the set piece defending is horrific. The players themselves have to take some of the blame, I'll be honest. You know, tweeted on Saturday evening that, you know, if Paunović goes, which I don't think he will at this point, but you can't you can't put all the blame for this on Belko Panovic or indeed the external factors. You know, there's got to be a point where the players take some responsibility for what's happening, because a lot of this squad now have let down three managers in some cases. I'm not going to name any names, but more than that, no pun intended. But it is a mess at the moment. But I think probably there that saving grace is that hopefully this 2 week break now. You know, Tom Holmes said that the international break comes at the perfect time, and I have to agree with the way that hopefully new signings. You know, the deadline is tomorrow. We're recording this Monday morning, so the deadline is Tuesday. Hopefully, a couple more bodies come in the door and the depth looks a bit better. The 2 weeks gives the likes of Halilovic. I don't know if Bellerin's actually away with Ghana over this 2 weeks, but hopefully he's not. And he gets a chance to settle in, and the squad hopefully looks a lot stronger come QPR in 2 weeks' time. You know, we're still going to have the injuries. We're still not going to have, you know, João Mata, whatever, but hopefully a striker comes in to solve that a little bit. In terms of starts to the season, it's almost as bad as I can remember, really, apart from the start we had under Paul Clement 3 years ago. So yeah, there's not an awful lot to be optimistic about, and we'd be here for hours if we were talking about the current state of the club. But hopefully, you know, 2 weeks time things look a little bit brighter, people have calmed down a bit after defeat on Saturday. It is a tough run of games after the international break. You know, QPR, Fulham, Middlesbrough, Cardiff come up as well. So it's not going to be easy, but I think, in terms of the start, we've been as badly prepared as we possibly could have been, really. So hopefully the 2 weeks give us a bit of breathing space.
Yeah, let's go on then to Liam Chamberlain on that note, actually, because he's saying about the signings. He's saying, who is making decisions on who we sign? Another centre midfielder coming in. Højlund signing, not the one we needed, in his opinion, and no strikers. In terms of who is making the decisions, I suppose Dae-Yong Pang is a CEO who is ultimately a Dae Jong ally. I suppose they should all be allies of the owner, but I think he's very much a man with a kind of direct line to the owner. And then we've kind of still got Nigel Howe floating around and Paunovic himself. So I suppose it's a mix of those kind of four men, really, in terms of who's making the decisions. But at least we are kind of moving that way, and we'll talk about the signings in just a second in News Bites. Lee Perrette saying, whoever is looking after the players and getting them injured all the time needs to be sacked. Becoming a joke now, how are they getting injured when they're not even playing? Well, kind of looking through them, it's always tough from the outside to work these things out. But Yaku Mate got injured away from the club, so I guess we can't really blame the club for that. Lucas Shaw was in a game, just kind of one of those awkward ones with his hip, I think it was. We don't know about McIntyre or Aziz, as far as I'm aware, Ben. And Ajaria was supposedly COVID-related. So is this not just a case of, you know, when it rains, it pours?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I know it's obviously tongue-in-cheek in terms of a tweet, but I'm not, you know, I'm not in favour of anyone getting sacked, really, especially in this current climate. I think there are lots of elements, really, in terms of those players getting injured. I mean, I think clearly the coaching has shifted slightly. I think you've got to look at the kind of conditioning work that is going on at the club in terms of the resilience there. Even with the depleted squad, you would imagine that those players could get through four games without being, you know, completely injured for a long period of time. And it just doesn't seem to stop at the moment, really. And I think if I was Panovic, I'd be kind of tearing my hair out, really. I mean, I love the club, but I wouldn't manage him at the moment because there's so many factors that he kind of can't control, really. That's why it's kind of quite irritating from my point of view, because I'm pro Panovic, that he made those kind of decisions that he did on Saturday. I think in terms of those injuries, you get, you know, two, three of those players back and it suddenly looks a lot brighter. But you know, no squad could cope with that level of injuries in the Championship, certainly. You know, that even some Premier League clubs that wouldn't be able to cope with the loss of creativity that we've had. So yeah, there are some incredibly different factors that the club and Paunovic is dealing with. But you know, we are where we are, and those players on the pitch have got to make it count and make it work. And you know, there is an element there, I think, from my point of view, the games that I've seen, but also, you know, the kind of stuff from Saturday, is that there are players that have down tools a little bit. And again, I'm not going to start a witch hunt on any players at all, but it was very disappointing to see the reaction of some of those professionals. So I think with some of the signings coming in to bulk out the squad a little bit, that will make it easier. I'm still not really convinced of the kind of profile of player that we're signing now. I think it from an outside perspective, it does seem very scattergun. There are a lot of players that have gone lower down the divisions that were free agents that I felt could have done a job. One example of that would have been someone like Johnny Williams, who's obviously gone to Swindon. But I think he would have been great for a season because he's energetic. He knows what he needs to do. Experienced international player and wouldn't have cost a huge amount. But I'm not sure really of the profile of player that we're getting in. And my kind of long-term concern about putting a fly in the ointment is we're signing these players on year-long deals. What happens at the end of that year? And we've talked, you know, previously on the pod about those players out of contract that we've got in a year's time. But again, there doesn't seem to be any movement on that at the moment. So I think in terms of people signing the players, it's a great point. But for me personally, that's kind of the least of my worries at the moment. I just want to know who's actually behind the scenes and their job role and kind of what profile we're looking at players. You know, I've been linked with Scott Dann and obviously Danny Drinkwater today. And on paper, they're pretty good signings. But are they going to be long-term solutions to our problems? No, they're not. So it feels like at the moment we're just going through the motions in terms of knee-jerk and kind of responding to the situations we've got short-term rather than going, what is this player going to do for us long-term? So, yeah, there's a whole host of things about the transfers. But right now, we do need the bodies in and we do need something to back up the very weak starting 11 that we've seemingly got at the moment.
Andy Taylor said, these results cannot continue. How long will Paulo last for and can we afford to sack him anyway? Well, he's only around he's contracted till the end of the season. So I don't think it would cost us a huge amount if we were to sack him, Ollie. But I mean, it's still not a desirable situation for me. How long will he last for? Let's get rid of kind of what you hope. And what do you think he will actually get? Do you think he will get a few more weeks or a couple more months, or do you think maybe we'll start seeing rumours pop up in the next few days, Ollie, that the Poundwich will be going?
Well, I think what we can say is that the owners have used international breaks before to sack managers. They did it with Jaap Stam and with Jose Gomez. So whether they use this international break, I think is unlikely. I'd imagine they'll give him to the next international break. Pretty much what Jose Gomez got 2 years ago, the October international break, was when he was dismissed. You never know what Dai Young is going to do. So if you sacked him tomorrow, I almost wouldn't be surprised. But I think particularly today and tomorrow, certainly until the end of the transfer window, you don't want to be trying to bring in players without a manager in place. So I don't think we're going to see any immediate departure. I don't think he'll go the next 2 weeks, and nor do I really think he should go. I think he does deserve that time. As we said, hopefully things look a little bit brighter in 2 weeks when new signings have bedded in. Hopefully a couple of the injured players come back. But obviously that said, as I say, the run between now and the next international break is not an easy one. You know, QPR at home when we come back, you know, they've started the season very, very well. Peterborough at home, that's got to go down as a must win as a newly promoted side. No disrespect to Peterborough in that sense, but again, they're a side who are probably going to be in and around us this season, so we've got to get the win there. Fulham away is probably as hard a game as we're going to face all season. You know, their squad's far too good for the Championship. Middlesbrough at home, again, you know, Neil Warnock always a very tough opponent, and again, they've started the season relatively well. Derby away, you've got to say, has got to be a win with the state that they're in, and then Cardiff away, who are also a very good side under Mick McCarthy. So it's not an easy run of games at all between now and October. So it wouldn't surprise me if things didn't pick up. There's multiple factors that can come into play, whether the players' faith in Panovic has gone after that 4-0 defeat. We've seen time after time with this squad how they, once they well, I say don't like a manager. Once they sort of lose faith in a manager, it's very unlikely to get it back. I mean, it's happened with pretty much all the managers we've had, you know, since Yap Stam, really, that this group of players just, you know, can't seem to get themselves up for games for whatever reason. Once the tide turns, and we've very rarely seen managers, you know, manage to turn the mood around after a defeat like this. So I do doubt Panovic's ability to do that. But as I say, you know, I think he will get certainly the next month or so, and then we'll see. But you know, as I say, Dayong has proven in the past that he's not afraid to make decisions quickly. He's not necessarily willing to give managers time. You know, Panovic was appointed a year ago yesterday. He's the first manager to last a year in the job since Yap Stam. So that tells you all you need to know about how free Dayong, you know, hires and fires managers. So
yeah,
we'll see. I think I would be surprised if we see him go this international break, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he went either in October or perhaps even before, if the results, you know, if we lose QPR, Peterborough, Fulham, he might go then. So yeah, who knows?
I think they'll give him until at least, as you say, the October international break is probably the most fair time. Maybe I think there's one in November as well, because ultimately he's, you know, you can't bring in all these new players and then be like, why haven't you done anything with the new players? And it's like, well, they haven't played yet, so he's got to have that time. So watch
this. They did that with Gomez. In fairness, they you know, Gomez brought in, you know, what's it, 6-7 players in the last week of the match window, and they gave him 6 weeks to win.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, well, watch this podcast become completely out of date tomorrow morning is what I'll say about that. Andy Taylor, so we've already done. Sorry, Andrew Smith saying, at what point would you have made substitutions yesterday? He made just the 2 on 79 minutes. I mean, Ben, I kind of feel like this probably wasn't the game that substitutions were going to turn around, because they're mainly kids on the bench. I guess it kind of works. It's two senses for me. The first one is you kind of let the players, or tell the players who have got themselves in this mess, that they're the ones who are going to have to turn it around. And also throwing on, you know, really young players, inexperienced players, into a bit of a dogfight at 2-0 down when the other team is, you know, right in their pomp, and it's just not going the right way. It's probably not the best time to kind of throw young players on, really, is it?
No, I mean, I think my personal view would have been on, you know, what was it, 51, 52 minutes when the second goal went in. Probably would have made a sub after that. Would have brought on Halovic a little bit earlier, you know, just to kind of try and get a goal back and try and spark something. But, I mean, looking at the bench, it wasn't the most experienced bench, as we know, really. And the last thing you want is to chuck those players in and let them be part of the hammering, because it's not going to do anything for their confidence. You know, I can't see, looking at the list, anyone really that would have made a huge difference. Obviously, Clark's been doing quite well for the 23s. But again, you know, once they're kind of 3-0 up or 4-0 up or whatever, he's not really going to have, you know, the team at that point had finally kind of shut up shop, and we're not creating anything, so point of bringing on then, really. It's difficult. It's very hard with that question. I mean, I think they could all look at everyone involved in the club there on the day, could look at things they could have done differently. I think, as we said right at the start, you know, defensively, they probably weren't set up right in terms of swapping the wing-backs around or the full-backs around. But yeah, I mean, in terms of substitutions, until we get those players back from injury and kind of more players in, hopefully in the next sort of day and a half, then we can't really talk about substitutions, because there's very little to bring on in place of what's already playing.
Yeah.
It's a good point, but it's very difficult to kind of answer that fully, really.
Yeah. Kev O'Brien saying, the signings are very welcome and hope they restart the season. Do we need to talk about who should be captain? Leadership seems missing on the pitch. Shame Mate is injured, as I would give him a go. That personality could get the team going. I suppose, Ollie, as Liam Moore, as a general club captain, is fine. I think it's just on the pitch, his performances aren't enough. In terms of it, you shouldn't have to be the captain to kind of bring out the best in those around you and be vocal. I think Michael Morrison's a good example of that, someone who is quite vocal. But Kev is right, leadership is missing at the moment. And is that because of the inexperience of the squad, because it's a bit of a, you know, of a bit of a thin team, or is it just an innate problem that this set of Reading players kind of have?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question really we've been asking ourselves for years, really. You know, the squad does lack leadership. I mean, it lacks really experience in general, really. You know, Michael Morrison, Raphael and Junior Hoyle are the only players in the squad over the age of 30. You know, Liam Moore is experienced. Obviously, you know, he's been at the club, he's put on the longest serving players now. as a man, like, I can't speak high enough of him, really. He speaks very well. His heart does seem to be in the right place. I don't know the decision-making behind sort of who does interviews and stuff, but I thought it was strange that it was Tom Holmes, who was the youngest player on the pitch, did the post-match interview on Saturday and not Liam Moore. I would have liked to see Moore front up, which in fantasy has done in the past. I think he was the one that fronted up after the Wigan defeat a year ago. But I would have liked to have seen him, say something, really, because he was, one of the main culprits for the defeat. But yeah, I think sometimes you have to lead with your ability as well. And, we have seen Liam Moore come up short in that respect. You can beat your chest as much as you want and say all the right things, but ultimately, if you're, not defending well and putting in errors, then, it's not really going to inspire the players around you. So it is a tough one. Obviously, Michael Morrison is probably the obvious option if it wasn't Liam Moore. But then again, really, you've got the same problem with him, is that he's also looked very shaky this season. He looks a shadow of himself, really, from last season. I don't know how much of an effect the injury had back end of last season's had on him. The other candidates for me, probably John Swift, who has worn the armband before. If you're talking about leading with ability, then Swift is the prime candidate, and he is now one of the more experienced pros in the squad. He's been here, he was signed in the same summer as Liam Moore, so again, he's a longer seven player. Josh Laurent as well seems to be the sort of character that is perhaps more of a quiet leader. You don't need to be a shouty, sweary leader all the time. Josh Laurent could fill that, so there are candidates, yeah, but I think in general, the squad does need more leaders, more experience, and we'll come on to the rumours and stuff in a minute, but perhaps that is why they're looking at the likes of Danny Drinkwater and Scott Dann. As much as I'm against them as players, perhaps as people, they might add it. I mean, probably not Drinkwater, but certainly Scott Dann would add an awful lot of experience and leadership if he does come in. So yeah, it's a strange conundrum. I'm not in favour of stripping him of the captaincy based off just one performance off Saturday, but if he carries on underperforming, as I say, you've got to lead with ability sometimes, and if he does carry on making mistakes and making errors like that, perhaps you do have to ask questions. But I don't think we're quite in that territory just yet.
Yeah, a couple of questions to round off the mailbag then. As I say, it's a bit of a chunky one this week, but these are taking us away from the game a little bit. So we'll breeze through these. And Tom saying, to get completely away from the trip yesterday, what improvements / refurbishments have happened to the ground in recent years? I'm sure the Lotto Stadium is original from 98 or at least our promotion in 06. And what changes are needed? Well, the view from the Dolan, Ben, what's your kind of view on any changes that could be going on with the Select Leasing Stadium at the moment?
I think it's just about fan engagement, isn't it, really? I think we went through a period of time where half time was kind of reasonably enjoyable, in terms of we had those little games going and people kicking balls against cones and corner flags and stuff, which was quite cool, but it's just non-existent, really. And I think in terms of the match day experience as a whole, we could do a whole pod on kind of the catering and the atmosphere outside the ground and things like that. I think from my point of view, was kind of involved with Star, we've kind of looked at that, and there are a few little things in the pipeline that we want to do. One of the simple things is kind of bringing the flag back, just to get a bit of just something else to look at, really, before the game kicks off. But it comes down to personnel and manpower and finances, which at the moment the club just don't have behind the scenes. So I think from an entertainment point of view, there's lots. From a physical point of view, I think the stadium's in pretty good nick, to be honest. I think, obviously the scoreboard was pretty expensive and looks, all right, as scoreboards go. But, from a physical point of view, until we're regularly getting sort of 50,000 fans in when we're sort of playing at the top end of Europe in the Premier League, it's nothing will change physically with the stadium. It's just about trying to make the match day experience as positive as possible, and that's why away games are so interesting this year, in terms of seeing what other clubs are doing at the moment. So yeah, there's things that they could be doing, but again, it all comes down to budget and personnel restrictions, so it's difficult to kind of suggest too many wholesale changes, because we know that probably they're not going to happen in theory. So yeah, but physicality wise, I think the stadium's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just the stuff that has changed over that kind of period that Tom mentioned. You know, you've got Club 1871, the outside of the East Stand has become so much more of a bit of a fan hub, I suppose you could say. Obviously, the loss of blue collar food, I know that upset a lot of people. It's not an area that I particularly use very often, but I can understand that you want as many options and local options as you can get for that, for the outside of the stadium. You know, got the Eamon Dolan mural, the mural on the other side of the fans, and I think they're planning on doing one for John Medeski as well. So, you know, there's stuff going on, and you're absolutely right, Ben. It's money, and I'd agree that certainly halftime is a bit of a dead zone at the moment, and even the Golden Gamble draw kind of felt a bit of an afterthought at the last couple of games I've been at. No 1980s players coming out and waving at the crowd and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think it's just a case of we have made progress certainly over that time, but what we can add on, hopefully the club can find out a way of doing that. Final question then. Sean Burgess saying, feels like it could be a somber podcast, so let's lighten the mood. What's the favourite game you can remember going to? And well, I'll kick this off. I'll go to both of you for this one. And as it's Sean asking, a game that myself and Sean and both our dads and my mum actually came along to, I think it was the 11th anniversary or something like that of this a couple of weeks ago, was the Torquay League Cup game down at Plainmoor, as I say, quite just over a decade ago now, which ended in Gregor Raziak with the 119th minute leveler overhead kick, and fans bundling towards the front of the stand kind of broke the wall and a few people collapsed onto the pitch with that. And it was just one of those days where you turned up in this random town in the southwest and there were about 700 Reading fans there, which was quite the sight. And I remember my mum, before we went into the ground, saying, "Oh, well, at least I hope you've got me a good seat." So, well, it's terracing, so no, sadly not. But no, it was all good fun. So, Ollie, I'll come to you first then. Favourite game to round off the mailbag?
Yeah, I mean, not a particularly exciting one, but sometimes the biggest nights really are the best nights. And the FA Cup quarterfinal replay against Bradford, I'm not sure my answer will ever change really from that, unless we sort of win the Premier League or win the FA Cup. It was... I can't really remember feeling happier at a football match, to be honest. Just, you know, a packed, mad stad, under the lights, you know, 2-0 up inside 9 minutes, you know, those sort of games, you know, where there's so much on the line, you can't usually really enjoy them because it's very tense. It might be 0-0 for the first, you know, for the first half, you know, possibly even later, you know, similar sort of nights, occasions, you know, the playoff semi-finals where, you know, either they've been first leg, so nothing's decided on that, or the one 4 years ago, where it's a very tense game against Fulham and it's only decided by one goal. You know, the game we won promotion with against Nottingham Forest, again, the goal doesn't come to the final 10-15 minutes, so it's quite a tense affair. But in comparison, the quarterfinal replay, you know, 2-0 up inside 9 minutes, you know, the party starts straight away. You know, and Jamie Mackie, love him or hate him, gets a third goal late on, and it's just a real party atmosphere, and not something I can really sort of compare. You know, it was a real sense in it, and it was something we'd never achieved before. Well, something that no one had ever seen, obviously, since 1927. So everyone there was experiencing this for the first time, that little old Reading win the FA Cup semi-final going to Wembley. It was, yeah, I can't really remember feeling happier at a football game. So I think for many years to come, my answer won't change for that. It's got to be that quarterfinal replay.
Yeah, what are you saying for that one, Ben?
It's a great question. And I'll be honest, I saw it before the pod, so I've had time to have a little think about this. But I've got two, really. There's quite a few I could pick, but the first one really is the Southampton away with the Lafondra masterclass, because I think that the absolute scenes in that game were just unbelievable, and I don't think I've ever been part of a stand that's moved that much, really. It was just the atmosphere and like the way, I say behaving, sound like a, you know, grumpy dad, don't I, but like the way that the Reading fans were that day, it was just fantastic. And to go up there and or go down there rather and beat our rivals like that was just outrageous. It really was, and that was when I was like, we're going to win the title, and that was, you know, sewed up, as Ollie mentioned there, with the Forest game sort of the next week, really. But that game was brilliant. And the other one, bizarrely, just because it's a piece of history, is the Portsmouth away Premier League game of the highest score. It was just a crazy game of football, and I just remember kind of walking out and both sets of fans, you know, part sets of fans were crying, you know, Portsmouth fans were just deliriously happy, and Reading fans because they couldn't believe what they'd seen. So that definitely will stick in my memory forever, because it was just a completely bonkers game of football. And obviously to this day, even with all the mega money that they've got and all the players they've got, it's still the record for the highest scoring Premier League game. So I'll go with those two.
Yeah, that Southampton game will always be up there for me as well. And the West Ham game, that probably only about a fortnight before, that was just one of those mad ends to the season. It's kind of actually bringing it back to this season. I was kind of thinking earlier in the week that obviously Reading haven't started well, but Reading did start well last year and then came, you know, slipped away at the end. And actually, maybe you'd rather it be the other way around. Maybe you'd start, if you were to choose, you'd probably rather start badly and finish strongly, and that's a better season than the other way around. So maybe that's some optimism we can cling on to going into the rest of the season. Let's go into News Bites then. Let's talk about what's going on around the club and some transfers.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Let's fill you in on the other Reading teams first. The women's team kick off on Friday night. That's against Manchester United on Sky Sports. So quite a big game for the Reading FC women's team to upset the odds. That'll pretty much be if they can get a win there. Under-23s have beaten Wolves 3-0 and Stoke 2-1 in the past week. Abel Choman and Malachi Talent scoring on Sunday. And the under-18s had a 2-1 defeat to Leicester. So they've kind of, I think they've started pretty poorly this year, but they've got Spurs on the 11th next up. Ben, I'll hand it over to you then, because we want to have an update from Star on all things supporters, trust at Reading, and see what's going on with them at the moment.
Yeah, it's a couple of bits, really. We've kind of got the AGM this week, Thursday at 8 o'clock. I need to double check, but you know, it'd be good to get as many people on that as possible. So if you want to be part of that, I'll kind of put the details on Twitter and kind of share that around. But it'd be good to try and get some more people involved in that.
So is that a Zoom call? Is that?
Yeah, it's on Zoom. Yeah. I think realistically, it's been a really difficult start to the season. And, you know, the fan base have gone through being angry at, you know, fan sites, and then the board, and then the players and Panovic, and then back around to kind of Star and the EFL and all sorts. So I think it's kind of probably a good time in the next 2 weeks to kind of take stock of where we're at, really. And I think what I've been part of this morning and what I've been doing for Star is just kind of creating a little article with the help of, you know, Roger, friend of the show, kind of Star's response to some of the things that are going on. So that'll be going out probably in the next week or so. So kind of look out for that, because, you know, from a personal point of view, I share the concerns of the fan base. I don't think some of the things that are being proposed are kind of the right thing to do, and the kind of jet responses personally. But, you know, there is a need for the supporters group to kind of, you know, politely and respectfully challenge what's going on at the club. And that's what we're aiming to do. Now, myself and Paula, in September at some point, we'll go and see the board and have kind of the first, what's called a structured dialogue meeting with the board, and kind of put the questions that we've had given to us by, you know, Star members and non-members alike, and just kind of talk through where we're at the club, really. But I think realistically, you know, we do share the concerns of where the club is at, and one of the things that we are looking to do is kind of develop that dialogue and move forward. And my personal belief, not Star's belief, but my personal belief is that if the board and the owner came out and were just a little bit more communicative and a little bit more open to engage with the fans, a lot of the kind of, not all of it, but a lot of the anger would subside a little bit, because if fans knew where we stood and where we were going to go long term, what the plan was. You know, none of this want to be in the Premier League nonsense, because that's a mile away at the moment. You know, I think a lot of the reactions would be a little bit more tempered, and there would be a little bit more of an understanding in terms of if results weren't going particularly well. So my personal belief is that, you know, I'm doing everything I can as a Star board member to be able to push that forward and engage with the fan base a bit more and the players as well, and just kind of, you know, be as positive as we can be, really. So that's kind of where we're at, really. As I said, the AGM is coming up, so it'd be good to get people on that and kind of just go from there and just see what we can do as a supporters trust. But it is time now that we kind of club together a bit more and start to put a bit more gentle pressure on the board and just kind of get them to engage with the fan base a lot more than they have been, really.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So get, we'll make sure those the details for the AGM are on the Tireless End Twitter if you want to pop along and listen in and throw your contribution into that. Let's talk about some transfers then. Ollie, we've had a couple already in. Baba Rahman and Alan Halilovic, as you may prefer. Obviously, Halilovic was on the bench against Huddersfield, as we mentioned. We've got Danny Drinkwater and Scott Dan linked. And there was also talk of Femi Azeez going to Liverpool on £75,000 a week wages. Sadly dashed by his injury. I don't know what transfer fee. When I saw 75,000, I thought that was the transfer fee, let alone 75 grand a week wages that caught offside, the website had claimed, but that's not going to happen. So Drinkwater and Dan potentially joining Rahman and Halilovic. Ollie, what's good, bad, somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, probably somewhere in the middle, based off different players. Azeez, I've just got lol just for that, just nonsense. I think in terms of deals we did last week, I think Baba Rahman, good deal. It was blindingly obvious we needed to fill that left-back hole. He comes with decent pedigree. He's a full international. He's played top-flight football for the last 6 seasons. Obviously, albeit in Greece last year, but he won the Greek Cup last year. So that's supposedly a good rugby to have. But I think just we needed to get that option at left-back, and he's probably almost as good as we could have got, really. He seems a pretty attacking fullback from the stuff I read about him. Probably some question marks, maybe, over his defending. But I think we saw at the weekend that we simply can't carry on with Andy Yeardom at left back. And for whatever reason, Rucka Panovic doesn't maybe trust Ethan Bristow there. Certainly this season, he's only 20 years old and maybe isn't quite ready for regular football just yet. I think that's a good deal. Halilovic, obviously he comes with a huge reputation as a youngster, one of the youngest players in Champions League history, youngest ever Croatian international, one of those players that's compared to Lionel Messi at a very early age. And then inevitably, such as that poison chalice, he drops off, really. Obviously, his career is not panned out as he would have hoped, but he was at Birmingham last season or the second half of last season, and they seemed pretty upset, that the Birmingham supporters pretty upset to not keep him on. So by all accounts, again, that's a fairly good deal. Again, as a free agent, we've said that maybe at this stage of the window all of the good free agents are gone, but as far as I can see, Halilovic seems to be a pretty good addition in terms of he adds that creativity to the midfield. He can play 10 or out wide on the right, he said. So he adds that versatility. That's a good deal. Danny Drinkwater, for me, less so. It's a big no from me, Danny Drinkwater. I think it's very easy to hear the name Danny Drinkwater and get quite excited, but this is obviously a very, very different player to the one that won the Premier League 6 years ago. And yes, he's achieved a lot in his career, and I've no doubt that maybe then he was a very good player, but that there probably aren't many players in the Premier League that have had quite as sharp a decline than him, both on and off the pitch. He's played 28 league games in the last 4 years. Fights outside nightclubs, headbutting a teammate in training. He played an academy game for Chelsea last year, and he was lashing out at 16-year-olds. Like, I understand, maybe off-field problems and that have maybe clouded that, but for me, he's not the sort of character I'd want around this squad. I think if you're going to be in a relegation battle, as maybe it's shaping up we are, or you want players to get you out of trouble, I just don't think Danny Drinkwater is that player. Perhaps if he has that hunger to sort of turn his career around and get back on track, then maybe. But yeah, I'm not overly convinced. Again, it's a body in the door and the squad needs depth, but sometimes maybe it comes at a cost. Scott Dan this morning, again, same premise for Drinkwater in the fact he's an experienced player. Whether it's a knee-jerk reaction based off the defending on Saturday, I don't know. But again, it's one of those ones that do we need him perhaps for depth? But do I want to play Scott Dan over Michael Morrison and Liam Moore? You know, yes, we tore into them earlier because of the defending, but realistically, again, Scott Dan's another player who's 34 now. He's not played an awful lot of football over the last few years for Crystal Palace, but he does bring that experience, and perhaps that's what this squad needs. So, yeah, it's. I think we have to be realistic with these signings, is that Reading are in obviously a difficult position with the embargo and being only able to sign free agents and loan players and under a certain wage limit. So there are only a limited number of options out there. So perhaps in the circumstances, Scott Dan's not a bad deal. But yeah, it's a tough one. I think I would like to see us get a striker before the deadline. I think we do need someone up there. You know, Puskas, you know, God help him, you know, it tries his best, but obviously doesn't fit the system we play. I would like to see someone in Lucas Yao's mould come in. But yeah, it's going to be the deadline is tomorrow, Tuesday. So, you know, hopefully an interesting 48 hours awaits.
Yeah, no, I think Rachman I'm happy with, left back. My Chelsea supporting mate, and I quote, described him as a hamhead, but I said that we'll have that because we haven't got anyone at the moment at all, so that's better than what we got. And yeah, Halilovic I'm happy with. Drinkwater is the one, Ben, isn't it? Scott Dan, yeah, I think I'd be happy with him. I'd happily put him in the lineup instead of Morrison at the moment. Drinkwater's the one that raises the eyebrows. Ollie's saying that he's not played much recently. 11 times he played for Turkish side Kasim Pasa last season. The season before that, he played 4 times for Villa and 1 time for Burnley in the Premier League. The season before that, he just played in the Community Shield for 30 minutes and that was it. So I just don't think that it's a great signing. I think at the very least, you know, we need players that can perform now, especially if they're coming in on loan or for 1-year deals. And I don't think the Drinkwater is that sort of player. And just generally speaking, you want players who are at least some way on a steady or upward trajectory in their career. And I suppose all 4 of them are not players like that. But Drinkwater, I just don't think it works.
Well, I mean, it's certainly not a great signing. I mean, I don't think any of the players we're getting at the moment are great signings, with all due respect to them. But we are where we are. I disagree slightly on the Drinkwater thing, because clearly there is, clearly from an outside point of view, the worst thing he did was join Chelsea. And they've fallen out of love with him. They've given him a massive contract of reportedly, you know, 110 grand a week or whatever. And they've just farmed him out to any club that can kind of contribute fully or part to the wage process. You know, they don't care about him, they don't want him. And that, I think, from a mental point of view, that's going to change people's perception. And I think if he can drop down a division, which to my knowledge he's not yet done while he's been at Chelsea, and really make a difference with the proviso of bringing in, you know, helping the young players and adding, you know, 20 games or whatever to a season, I think that would be his remit. And I think he would have to be realistic about where he's at in his career, and is he going to get any better offers? He will obviously want to play football. I can't imagine any football player not wanting to play football. But at the same time, he knows he's not got a future at Chelsea. The Premier League is probably beyond him now in terms of age and quality. So I think if we can get him, and we pay what, 4 grand towards his 110 a week or whatever it is, then I think it would be an all right signing. I don't think he's going to pull up any trees. I'd be very surprised if he did come in. We'd be talking about him in sort of May time again. Yeah, he's player of the season. That's not going to happen. But realistically, if we need a bit of weight and we need a bit of bite in there, he will be able to do that. He scored goals before. You know, he's all right on the set pieces. Again, I don't think he's going to be a starter, but certainly I think if we can get him in and, you know, give him an opportunity to show what he can do, I think that he will be good at that personally. But yeah, it's not a great signing by any stretch. But I just feel that the level that he's at now is kind of where we are, and he's got an opportunity to kind of rebuild himself, and we can, you know, potentially benefit from that.
I suppose it's one of those questions that always comes up for clubs of our kind of level, and you can see it at the moment with Derby and Ravel Morrison to an extent, is that trade-off, isn't it? And even with Halilovic, I suppose the players who were once touted to be brilliant and have even been brilliant before and aren't brilliant anymore, it's that roll of the dice that you have to take as to, can we make them brilliant again, or are we going to see them get even worse? And I suppose that's what Reading have to deal with. But you know, if Drinkwater comes in, I hope he proves me wrong, and I hope he can be, as Ben says, a useful squad player. And he's got the talent to be even more than that. There's no reason whatsoever that Winnemotta and Laurent have to play every single week. And if a player can upset that and move things around and add some competition in there, then I'm all for it. But as I said, I have my doubts. So 11 p.m. on Tuesday night is the transfer deadline. So as I sit here now, we've got 36 hours left of competition for signings, and hopefully a striker comes in. But keep on top of the Tyler Stend website. We've got the rumour tracker online and obviously the social media to hear what's going on around the club. And let's round off the show then with a bit of big match preview and looking ahead to what we think will happen in the next couple of weeks.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetylehurstend.com.
Prediction League first off then, myself, Wesley and Ollie all predicted defeats against Huddersfield. Actually feels like not very many of us. I think there's eight people and only three of us said we'll get a beat. So Wesley's on top of the league on 8 points. Ollie, you're second on 5. QPR at home on the 11th of September is the next game coming up. So we've got a couple of weeks to go. Obviously, at Tyler Stend, we'll have a week off next week. And I think it's probably a good idea that everyone puts Reading to the back of their minds after the transfer deadline is done and focus on other matters until we reconvene. But going into this break then, Ollie, we got 2 weeks. What do you think will happen over those 2 weeks? Do you think, obviously, Paunovic is a bit of a question. The transfers coming in, do you think that we'll bring in any more players? Do you think there's, aside from Drinkwater and Dan, let's not say that they're done, but obviously, you know, they're kind of, we're known at the moment. Is anyone going to come out of that for you? And you know, what do you want to happen over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, I don't think Paunovic will go. I think Dayong might show some patience for once, and he will keep him, particularly giving him time to let these new players bed in. As I said, I'd like to see a striker come in addition to or instead of Drinkwater and Dan. I think, you know, we need an option up there. You know, George Puskas is the only senior option, particularly now that Aziz is injured as well. You know, Jamari Clark has shown spurts, but I think you need another senior option in there. I know we've been linked to the Argentinian striker, Adolfo Gaich. I'm not sure that's how you pronounce his name, but you know, he seems to be of a similar mould to Lucas Schell, so maybe he comes in. I did think perhaps when Scott Down was linked this morning that maybe that means that a centre-back's going out. You know, Paunovic didn't rule out players leaving in his press comments after the Huddersfield game. So, you know, again, and likewise with Drinkwater, does Drinkwater coming in mean that maybe Josh Lauren is off? You know, he's been linked with the move to Nottingham Forest. You know, I said that with no inside knowledge, but it wouldn't maybe surprise me if one player did go. You know, we've told it to death how Reading needs money and how player sales are going to have to happen. So it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility, I don't think, for a player to leave before the deadline. But yeah, the 2 weeks needs to be now about just, you know, getting these players up to speed, getting them into the squad. Hopefully Ovi Ejaria comes back after the international break. Yes, some players are away. I think George Puskas is staying, which is probably quite a good thing for him to be here. I don't know whether Liam Moore is away with Jamaica, but I'd rather he stayed around to sort of, you know, sort of get himself back up to confidence and whatnot. So yeah, but pretty much there is then really no excuse to not come out firing after the international break. You know, this is almost make or break for Verko Paunovic now, and it's about the response. You know, if we can turn this around, it's got to happen quickly. And you know, with those players bedding in, with Ajari coming back, he's not really got many excuses to hide on now. So it's got to be a response after the international break. I really hope it is. It is a tough game against QPR. You know, they've started very, very well. You know, still unbeaten. You know, Rob Dickey is almost certainly going to score a screamer against us. You know, they've got some very good players. You know, Elias Chair, Charlie Austin, Sonny Dieng's a very good goalkeeper at this level. So it is going to be a very difficult game. But I hope we see a response, because we can't have another performance like Saturday again.
Ben, what do you think for that QPR game? What do you think is going to shake up the team? Do you expect to see all of the new players kind of thrown in together, or do you think Paunovic is going to take it a bit easier?
Well, for once, I think it's all come at a perfect time, really, isn't it? You know, obviously, end of the transfer window, middle of the start of the international break, you know, 4-0 loss, getting back to basics. I think in terms of what I want to see Panovic stay. I think the board will obviously ask questions and will have questions in their mind about whether or not he can take it forward. But my personal response is that he should, and he should be given the time to work with what he's got. I think in terms of QPR games, it's very difficult to call that because we don't know what the injury status of some of those minor ones will be. We don't know whether Ojara will be back in that time. We don't know, you know, in the next sort of 36, 35 hours, whatever it is left, what players will come in. So it would be nice to have question marks over the starting 11 moving into the QPR game. That's what I hope, because that would mean that we've got a bit of depth and we've got kind of some kind of backbone forming around the squad. So in terms of sales, I think that there's probably two players that I won't name because I don't want to do the job for any potential scouts that listen to this in terms of who they might buy from us. But I think there are probably two players in my mind that might go. But yeah, I mean, I think all I want to see from the QPR game is a response, really. Honestly, right now, whether it's tin pot or low expectations or whatever, but I'd settle for a 0-0 draw in that game, because at least we stopped conceding goals and we're not losing. And we will have stifled, as much as I hate to say it, but a very good team at the moment in QPR. So that's what I'll settle for right now. Don't write that down in the predictions, because I might go for a 3-0 win there at the time, depending on my confidence level. But I just want to see us back to basics. I just want to see us being a bit more control of the game, a bit more sensible, and not being so easy to play against, is kind of what I would like to see in that QPR game.
Yeah, I think for me, I just want to see if the new players come in, maybe I wouldn't start them all together, but you know, if it is Scott, Dan and Rackman and the rest on the bench, I think Halilovic probably is going to be a John Swift backup, or maybe if we want to go more attacking in the game, play them both together. But yeah, no, we don't need to do, you know, don't need a massive shake-up, depending on if the next 2 weeks on the training ground, get everyone settled in, everything like that, and take it slowly. And I agree with Ben, a 1-1 draw sounds absolutely lush, to be honest. So we'll wait and see. And as I say, Tarlas then will take a break off next week for the internationals. And then we'll be back the week after that, in which time I think Ollie will be taking the show for a week, because I'm taking my own little international break, although it's a staycation, so don't get too excited. And yeah, we'll see how things go. Keep on top of the Tarlas then for the transfer deadline action. Hopefully a striker comes in, as well as maybe those two players we've been talking about. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you very much, Ben, for popping on this week.
Absolute pleasure. No problem at all. Have a good week, everybody.
And thanks, Ollie, again.
No problem. Cheers, Mark.
And as I say, Reading have 2 weeks off now. The international break has come at the perfect time. And while we may sit down and have all our quarrels over the Huddersfield game and the state of the club at the moment, let's trust that something can change in our favour in the next couple of weeks. Trust that the new men can come in and sort the club out, and trust that Veljko Paunović has a master plan to change it all around over the next few weeks or months. Because if he doesn't, well, he won't be here for the next few weeks or months himself. So let's stay proud, stay loud, and back the boys and make some noise and take 2 weeks off. And hopefully when we all come back, Reading will be in much better shape. Until then, thank you for listening, and come on, you arse.